And we're back on Fictional Frontiers. I'm your host, Sohei Bawan. James Berardinelli, the founder of RealViews.net, the best online film critic in America, will be back next week. Our schedules just didn't jive, that's all. He wanted to come on this week. He wanted to come on today, actually, but my schedule just didn't allow it, and he has family responsibilities, as do I. And then you've got, you know, kids sick. You've got COVID floating around still. You've got allergies, the cold. All these different things are kind of conspiring to prevent us from meeting each week. But we're going to start doing this once the school year is done. He will be back next week because I do want him to talk about Top Gun Maverick, Paramount's new film. It's a throwback to the 80s, and there's still that 80s nostalgia wave that's chugging along. People still want stuff from the 80s. The new Stranger Things is coming out. By the time this releases, it'll probably be close to the initial release date. Again, a throwback. But throwbacks are only beloved by the masses if they're done incredibly well. And one thing about Tom Cruise, he's not one to cut corners. And he always errs on the side of danger, so to speak. He's one who doesn't rely on CG. He likes to do a lot of practical work, stunts and the like. He wants to be involved with, he wants to do it directly. And he's almost 60 years old. It's unbelievable how technology has advanced. You've got incredible dietitians, trainers, and the like. They're just able to keep people stronger for longer. They can't extend life. What's written is written. But they can make, or I don't want to say make, but they can help individuals remain stronger, become stronger than they were before. I was talking to someone about this the other day, about teenagers. It's funny. If you look at teenagers now, compared to teenagers in the 80s and the 90s, they're just so much stronger. They're physical specimens. They're able to do so many things that we could never do, parkour and the like. They definitely push the envelope with respect to some of the risks involved with the stunts they do. But they're just much stronger. They're just better athletes because there's been more time, there's been more effort made to learn about physiology, about diet and the like. There's access to all this for people online. And even if you're not a millionaire, you can still, you know, learn so much on YouTube. You can learn so much just by interacting with people in these spaces. Our knowledge base is just that much greater. And so it's amazing what people can do now versus what they could do back then. And if you look at Tom Cruise, he doesn't look 59. Yes, in the neck and the hair, and you know, some of the wrinkles are there, but physically he's just in incredible shape. So he's going to try to do as much as he can before he gets too old. And it's funny, when I think of Tom Cruise and these films, I think about Jackie Chan, I think of Liam Neeson, because the actor is synonymous with the roles they're playing, right? People don't really know or remember the names of the characters these actors are playing unless it's Ethan Hunt in the Mission Impossible films. And even then, it's kind of a blur because no one really remembers the stories. They just remember the incidents and the individual moments of excitement and visceral thrills. I was talking to someone the other day about that as well. You know, the first Mission Impossible film where Tom is hanging from the ceiling and trying to get this piece of information from this laptop without, or this desktop without triggering these alarms, and just the tension that's built in that scene. You know that he's going to survive. You know he's going to make it, but these films really rely on that, and there's an art to making you believe for a moment that this individual is at risk. And with films like Top Gun Maverick, what they do so well is that they rely on the practical, they rely on the real. And the stunt work is evidently amazing. Joe Kaczynski, who is no stranger to the Tron Legacy fans out there, is a person who has an incredible eye to the visual. One of the most underrated films of all time, I might add. Tron Legacy is still something I revisit again and again and again. And I would love to see in the theaters again in 3D. We'll get to 3D in a moment, but I would love to see that film again because it really is something that embraces the potential of the movie-going experience. And that's what this film, Top Gun Maverick, it's basically Tom Gun Maverick, but yes, Top Gun Maverick evidently does so well. It's a celebration of cinema and what you can do when you have this huge, large canvas if people are willing to take risks. And, you know, I think this is the kind of movie that's going to keep people coming back, going back to the theaters. The streaming services, we'll get to that in a moment as well, but for the longest time, people thought that streaming services were going to dominate. And now what we're seeing is chinks in the armor. We're seeing concern among the big players in the streaming world and in the streaming realm. They're not dominating the way they thought. They're not able to just throw money at anything and hoping it sticks. People are becoming more discerning, especially when you have more competition. That's the nature of competition. When you have more competition, when people are exposed to more and they have different options, it's not a situation where they're just going to take mediocrity. If I have, you know, five things in front of me and they're all mediocre, they're okay, but then I bring four or five other things that are exceptional and I say, oh, now you have nine options instead of five options, or say five more. We have five in the original set, then we have five new ones. You're not going to go with the original set. You're going to go most likely, all things being equal, with the new five that are better than the original five, because competition forces people to improve, and if they don't improve, they fail. And that's what's happening with Netflix right now. I mean, they are incapable of stemming the tide because all these other players are coming in. And one of the other things that the movie theater industry is hopefully going to be taking advantage of is the fact that regardless of how many players there are out there, there is the cinematic film experience that is very difficult to replicate. And a film like Top Gun Maverick is one of those films that I think falls in line with that. It's a perfect case study of what you can do when you embrace the medium as a whole. And I think it's going to keep the industry alive. I do think that, number one, these types of films draw people to the theaters, but I also believe that people want to get out. I want to get out. You want to get out. We've been in for so long, and people want things to do. And that's why I think ultimately in the end, the theater industry will survive. There will be some bumps in the road. There will be some changes. There will be closings of theaters. But I think that you will see the industry survive, but it's going to be these tentpole films that are going to keep drawing people in. And then just like the old days where you maybe saw a film like that and there were a couple other projects or films released at the same time, some of the family would go to see that and other members of the family would go see the smaller films or the art house fair, so to speak. So it's kind of a return to the old, so to speak. But we'll talk about that next week with James, and it's kind of a long-winded way to get to what I want to talk about this week, and that's where we are in genre entertainment as a whole. I alluded to the streaming services having some issues, and Disney Plus is not immune to that either. We've seen quite a few TV series introduced on the Disney Plus platform from Marvel. It's amazing how much content has been released since the pandemic started. Obviously, we've had a couple films. We've had, the Black Widow film. We had Shang-Chi. But then we had The Eternals, which was a colossal failure. Quickly went to the streaming services, and even then, no one cares about the film. So that was a real dud for Marvel, its first disaster. Then you had Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is doing pretty well in the theaters. But that's where we are right now with the films. But we've had so many series on the streaming service that you would think, okay, people love the MCU, and no matter what we give them, they're going to enjoy it, they're going to love it. So we had WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we had Loki, we had Moon Knight, we've had What If, and we've had Hawkeye, and now we're going to be seeing the release of Ms. Marvel in a couple weeks, and actually the next 2 weeks. And you've got a couple other projects like Secret Invasion on the horizon as well. And what's interesting, actually She-Hulk, I'll get to that in a moment as well. What's interesting is that no one I've spoken to has said that these series are exceptional by any stretch of the imagination. There are things they've enjoyed in the film, the series. I keep thinking Marvel films instead of Marvel series. But they keep talking about these projects as if they're just, junk food, so to speak. Something they kind of enjoy parts of and they move on. Not something that they really look forward to as, that fine dining experience. Again, going back to Top Gun Maverick. I'm not saying it's great cinema in relation to, say, some of the Oscar-winning films that are those that stand the test of time. But in its own way, I haven't seen yet, but maybe one of those films that actually does fall into that space in that it's an action film of the highest caliber. Must-see project. None of these series are must-see. That's one of the things I've noticed with these Marvel series as a whole. There are things that people enjoy, but too much of a good thing is never a good thing, number one. And then number two, I think narratively there are problems in each of these series. It seems as if some of the issues that people have had with the Marvel films in the past, where you have a great first act, a really good second act, and then a CG overkill scenario in the third act, that's what's happening with a lot of these series on television, the Marvel streaming series. What you're seeing as a whole is that you're seeing that the series format, or the method, the Marvel method that's been applied to the feature films, doesn't necessarily translate to an experience that's incredible from the beginning to the end. Yes, we're being introduced to characters. Yes, we're learning more about certain corners of the MCU, but from a pure storytelling perspective, it seems that with each one of these series, the final episode has not been must-see viewing, has not stuck the landing in a way that would garner a perfect score if it were going by Olympic scoring. It's okay. Everyone I've spoken to, whether it's comic fans, whether it's genre fans, whether it's MCU fans, whether it's just fans of pop culture as a whole, or people who just watch these series once in a while, none of them have said to me, look, this series from beginning to end was exceptional. And I'm wondering whether that's going to hurt Marvel in the long run. And I also wonder whether or not that's kind of tied to the sad reality that there's real no game plan with respect to where Marvel is going. I've said this once, I've said it a million times. Once Marvel got the rights to the Fox properties like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, those are major, major hitters in the Marvel comic book universe, or on the publishing side of things. People want to see those characters. I mean, the X-Men films were incredibly successful. These other characters, yes, they're interesting, but unless the story and the way the story is told is compelling, it's fine-tuned in a way that's must-viewing, people are going to be like, okay, you know what? It's just another quote-unquote superhero project. Give me the good stuff. Give me the major stuff. Give me the stuff that matters. Which is why ultimately in the end, with a lot of the MCU films, people kind of make a beeline to the, after credits scenes, the end credits. That's what they want to see. They want to see, is there some kind of incredible revelation? Is there something that's so important, essential for the narrative moving forward? I think what's happening is that people are not, interested in just kind of watching every single project with the idea that there's no forward thrust to the narrative as a whole with respect to the MCU. Because once you've established that kind of approach to storytelling, which is that every story is important, it's essential for the narrative moving forward, that's the expectation. Unless you're invested in this and you're just a hardcore fan, you're going to like it no matter what. So that's what I'm seeing with the MCU right now. I'm seeing this kind of fatigue that's come into the mix, so to speak. And I'm curious to see where it's going, because I'm wondering what the plan is. Maybe I shouldn't be wondering what the plan is. It's never been said explicitly by Kevin Feige that there is no plan. When you talk about different phases in the MCU, what that leads one to believe is that there is a plan. A phase is part of an ongoing project that leads to an ultimate conclusion, typically. We've got phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. There's a goal in mind. No one knows what the goal is with respect to the MCU. They're seeing these series here, and number one, like I said, they start off great, and they introduce these characters, but then most of them don't have very compelling landings, very compelling endings. But then number two, people don't see where this is ultimately supposed to be going. And then number three, they kind of want to see it go to the Fantastic Four and the X-Men. That's where they want to go. They're not interested, to be honest with you, in just kind of treading water. And that's what it seems like is happening. I know the pandemic has a lot to do with it, but I want to compare what the MCU is doing to what we see in places like Turkey. And I've mentioned this a few times on the show. The Turkish dramas are incredibly intense productions. They're filmed only about a week or two ahead of their actual release dates. And typically, with a lot of the historical dramas, they're about 2 hours, maybe even 2.5 hours worth of content. And I'm not talking about commercials. So it ends up being about 3 hours of content every week for about 26 weeks straight. And so there are advantages and disadvantages to that format. Number one, you get to spend more time in this world or the world that they are introducing. So it's a very immersive experience. It goes at a slower clip, but you get to really get to know who these characters are. There are moments for different characters to shine if it's done well. And also, if you're somebody who loves this world, you want to spend as much time as possible in that world. And that's what these shows kind of let you do. But they also move forward to an ultimate resolution in some way, form, or fashion. The budgets are nowhere near as large as what we're seeing with the MCU projects. And I think that's the other challenge with the Marvel projects as a whole, is that they're very expensive. Very expensive. And, you know, I don't know what the budgets are as a whole. I do know, having worked in the industry for quite some time, that there is a lot of inflationary, funny business going on with respect to some of the elements of a production. You don't know where the money is going, and there are things that are definitely overpriced. In Turkey, things are not overpriced. I mean, you have the top actors getting paid quite a bit, but then the extras and all the other people, they're, you know, working so, so hard, and they're under the gun too to produce content. And it's very compelling. It's almost akin to a soap opera, and that's why they call them almost Turkish historical soap operas. But I feel like maybe that would actually work with the MCU right now, given where they're going. If you're going to be treading water, it would be better to tread water and just go on for quite some time and let people really get to know these characters. Have moments where the characters can just hang out for an episode. You know, nothing really, really compelling as far as the story is concerned, but you get to know the characters a little bit more. The Japanese do this quite well with a lot of their anime series. They call them, you know, fillers, the filler episodes. But hey, you know what? Filler episodes are okay, because once you have people hooked, as far as the characters are concerned, as far as who these people are and where they're going, they like these people, they want to be around these people, they want to hang around as much as possible. So it's not really that annoying for them. And also, they know that there's going to be something eventually coming after the filler episode's done. Maybe there might be a hint of something to come in the future, or in the upcoming weeks, you'll see something that'll be, you know, worth your while. So if you miss it, it's not going to kill you, or it's not going to break the bank. Again, budgets across the board when it comes to film and television are going to have to be retracted. And what we're seeing with even what's happening in some of the other elements of the industry as a whole, you're seeing that people are understanding that, look, there has to be a contraction of the budgets. David Zaslav at Warner Brothers now is cutting so many different shows, and he's cutting back on the budgets of these films. And that's such a smart, smart approach to things. Full credit to him. I mean, he understands that, look, yes, this industry can be very lucrative for people involved with it, but the wasteful spending has to go. And you have to really focus more on the scripting, the storytelling versus the bells and whistles. Top Gun Maverick, I'm going back to that again. That's a film. That's a one-time film made for the cinemas. Yes, you can splurge. But for things that are on a weekly basis, by their nature, they should be more character-centric. They should be, or plot-centric. They should not be heavily reliant on the visual effects, heavily reliant on big budgets, because that's just not a model that's going to work for anyone. And at the end of the day, if you just have people who are fans of that, watching that, that should be enough to keep it very profitable, because you know what? The budgets are not through the roof. And so that's where I think we have to go with the MCU. And, you know, one prime example of the problems associated with those budgets is the She-Hulk Attorney at Law series that's coming out. The teaser trailer came out, and, you know, there are people who love the MCU, so they're going to talk about how much they love the teaser. I actually didn't think it was that great. I thought the dialogue was cringeworthy. I thought the performances, for what they were not really giving me that much. People have said it had an Ally McBeal type feel to it, but the thing that really did not work for me, aside from, like I said, the lack of humor, there was an attempt at humor, but for me, it was a lack of humor. I didn't think it was that great, were the visual effects. You have a character in She-Hulk, Jennifer Walters, who is basically, you know, the female version of the Incredible Hulk. Yet she looks unlike the Incredible Hulk, right? She's supposed to look like basically a large woman, you know, 7 feet tall, green. That's not easy. I mean, there are not that many actresses. I don't know if anybody could have pulled it off just finding someone who's that tall with the, you know, the physical attributes to pull off the She-Hulk character. So you're going to have to go with some type of visual effects. But what they did with the CG was that they tried to basically create a character that was going to, you know, seem believable, but at the same time was going to embrace the fantastic, right? Was going to embrace the fantastic. And what people have said is that, look, it just, it does not work. There's this uncanny valley look to the whole show. And when you look at Tatiana Maslany, who plays She-Hulk, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And what I've seen from people, they say, oh, guess what? You know, you just have to accept it, move on. But the thing is, once you've established that standard and that expectation in your audience, it's very difficult to say, listen, accept mediocrity. So that's one of the challenges that Marvel is going to have. And I don't know, you know, what they could do. I think what they could do is they could try to focus more on scripting, less on, you know, maybe some heavy action sequences and say, okay, listen, She-Hulk Attorney at Law, we're going to have one or two major action sequences, and maybe that will be the case, but we're really going to make sure that these visual effects pop. And so it's going to be really, really interesting that, you know, Marvel is going to have to deal with the reality of the situation that, you know, when you have more content and you've established a certain standard in one medium, people are going to be expecting the same standard in that medium, unless you're really willing to embrace the notion that, look, we're going to take our time. We're going to be giving a lot of content to you, but it's just not going to have as many dynamic action set pieces as some of the other projects that we've had in the past. I remember talking to someone about the Age of Ultron film, and, you know, it has a lot of problems, but one of the scenes that people really enjoyed was this one scene with the Avengers sitting around trying to pick up Mjolnir. And it was a scene that really allowed you to get to know the characters a little bit more. It was fun to be with them. And I think that's what people want to see. They want to see moments with the characters where they get to know them. You know, slice of life moments that really don't involve the narrative moving forward. And I think if Marvel is willing to embrace that, maybe that's the approach they should take. So before we head out, we have a couple minutes left. I wanted to quickly talk about what I'm really looking forward to more than anything else, to be honest with you, in almost all of pop culture at this time. And that's the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that's coming out in a few weeks. Now, there was an article released in Vanity Fair about the different Star Wars series coming to us very soon. There's going to be the Cassian Andor series coming out in a couple months. Obviously, Mandalorian Season 3 is coming out. We've got the Ahsoka Tano series, and then obviously Obi-Wan. And it's very interesting how there's this revisionist history in that article in which the leaders at Lucasfilm try to take credit for some of the things that have happened in the television space when it's clear that it's Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni that really steered this ship. They were the ones who deserved all the credit, do deserve all the credit. And a lot of the problems that happened in the past with Star Wars likely would not have happened had this stewardship been given to them, people who actually know Star Wars, who studied with George Lucas, who respect the legacy and tradition of the original series, the world building that's not just a cut and paste from, you know, a variety of different sources. It's not a Cliff's Notes version of creativity that goes into the process of world building. It's actual research that dives into different traditions from different parts of the world and tries to build and create something fresh and new, which is what George tried to do. These people failed to do that, and you had mediocre talents or people who really unfortunately didn't have the talent to pull it off, trying to pull it off with the sequel trilogy, and you created something that people ultimately hated. Just talk to the licensees and other people in the spaces tied to the verticals of the Star Wars trilogy, sequel trilogy, and you'll find that to a T, everybody thought those films were a colossal failure. You can't sell anything related to the sequel trilogy right now. Even the theme park in Orlando and in Disneyland, Galaxy's Edge, you still hear people complaining all the time about not having enough of the original trilogy content because no one wants the sequel trilogy stuff. I digress. But it's just interesting how that Vanity Fair piece tried to make it seem as if that was the plan all the time. And certain people who shall remain unnamed tried to indirectly or directly take credit for, to be honest with you, decisions that they were kind of forced into because of the failures of their previous efforts. Failing upward, let's just put it that way. But nonetheless, I am looking forward to the Obi-Wan series. I am a real fan of Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi portrayal in the films. I think Hayden Christensen is a very, very talented actor. If you have not seen Shattered Glass, rent Shattered Glass. Watch Shattered Glass. An incredible film about the New Republic and some of the funny business that went on there with respect to the honest or lack of honesty in journalism there. Got to see it. Shattered Glass. Hayden Christensen deserved an Oscar for that film. And his performance was amazing. But it's great to see him back. So if you ask me what I'm most excited to see, it's going to be Obi-Wan. Because it's going back to the prequel trilogy. And I know people are not the biggest fans of that. But when you go back and watch the prequels, and you go in and understand that those films were made for families, for kids. And that's the other thing we'll talk about maybe in the next week or two. How, unfortunately, a lot of these projects have been hijacked by adults who have failed to recognize that these projects are for kids. The Marvel films, the superhero films, the Star Wars films, all these things were meant for kids. Let them have their cake and let them eat it too. Don't try to make things more mature just because you want to have stories that you want for yourself that are nostalgia fair. Let them have their fun. You're an adult. Grow up. Sorry about that. I went off on a rant. But as we head out, I just want to say that those prequels were much beloved. It was great to hear Ewan McGregor say that it just warmed his heart, Hayden as well, that people love those films. And we're going back to the spirit of those, hopefully with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I'm really looking forward to giving you my thoughts on that when they release these episodes. So I'll talk to James Baranelli about this next week about Star Wars and Marvel. But this was kind of a free flow discussion. You know, we went off in a lot of different directions, but it was more about the cinematic experience. And again, like I said, I think we're going to see films like Top Gun Maverick and some of the other films like the new Avatar bringing people back again and again and again. That's going to allow the experience to survive. As the streaming wars continue and they become more like networks, I think you're going to see people looking for diverse content from an experiential point of view. And that's a good thing. You know, too much of the same thing is not a good thing. And it's good to see that there's going to be competition, that mediocrity will not be allowed to reign simply because people don't want the competition. Competition is a good thing. You're listening to Fictional Frontiers with Sohei. We'll talk to you next week when James comes back.